first Drive Time edition of Lambda Weekly, the longest-running gay and lesbian radio show on anywhere in the world. I'm David Taffet in the beautiful KNON Penthouse Studios in Oak Lawn with Patty Fink. We have no idea where Laron Landis is, probably dropping off his daughter.
Probably so.
At daycare, and who knows if he'll show up. If he does, fine. Alex the intern is home in bed. Somebody walking in. Here's Laron. Congratulations, you made it to our first Drive Time edition of Lambda Weekly. Laron, glad to see you. Patty was here before you. Patty, Laron, and I have been doing this show together for what, about 12 years?
11 or 12 years.
On Sundays. The show itself has been on for 1,430 shows, roughly by my count, since the station went on the air in 1983, but we've gone Drive Time. We even have a producer. Welcome, Roz.
Welcome, welcome.
Hi.
Anyway, don't worry. We haven't sold out. I checked with my accountant. He said that if KNON gave us a raise, that would put us in a tax bracket. No raise. I just wanted to kick off our new time slot on the right foot and tell everyone here in the studio. God, you're looking like crap today. Our guest today is John Wright. John is the online editor of Dallas Voice. John makes sure that things that I write, my rants, either get rewritten coherently or get thrown out. He makes sure breaking news is always on the front page of DallasVoice.com. He spends his days listening to committee meetings, watching news feeds, writing news flashes, or just flashing. Welcome, John, and let me know if I sound too cheerful in the morning. I am not used to this hour at all.
You sound way too cheerful.
Thank you all. Laron, before we start with John, Laron, Sunday... Arnold was our guest. Arnold Wayne Jones was our guest. You're not hearing anything, are you?
No, not at all.
Where are you? Okay, you should be. Well, I'll replug you elsewhere. Is that better?
No.
No, that's not better.
Let's see here.
Oh, there you are.
Okay, yeah, this one works.
Arnold was on. He made his Oscar picks. He got them all right.
He did. I heard.
How about you?
I think I did like 75%. All of the main awards, I totally got right. Little ones, I was wrong on. Okay. Yeah.
I was actually went to a virtual Oscar party online on Facebook. It's actually Karen McLaughlin's online Facebook party. It was really quite fun, but I was cheering for Annette Bening in every category.
In every category?
Oh, yeah.
I was cheering for her also in Best Actress.
And she didn't even win her own category.
No, she didn't. I thought she was going to get original screenplay, but it just didn't happen.
Yeah. She sounds like a good original screenplay to me. John, welcome.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here for the first Drive Time show. But you sound way too cheerful.
And believe me, it'll wear off by the end of the show. John is the online editor of Dallas Voice, writes news, so we thought we'd just talk some news this morning. One of the things that we haven't talked about here on the show because... Well, quite frankly, the two of you pooped out last week. The Obama administration, they decided not to defend Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
DOMA.
DOMA, thank you. They decided not to defend Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We already got rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, even though we haven't really. But we'll talk about that in a minute. Right wing has even started calling for his impeachment for not defending the law.
Yeah, Newt Gingrich actually said so in a Newsmax interview, for whatever that's worth.
Right.
So,
okay.
He says he's a dereliction of duty, that he should be impeached.
Okay. What obligation does the administration have to defend a law as opposed to enforce it? In other words, no, Obama can't just suddenly say gay people can get married, but does he have an obligation to actually defend a law in court?
Not if it's unconstitutional. As my understanding is that apparently there's precedent for administrations not defending laws that they deem unconstitutional, and that's apparently what he's done in this case.
Well, and he's not even said that the whole law is unconstitutional. He said one portion of it is unconstitutional. And I do agree there's a difference between not enforcing and not defending a law.
What portion of the law is that?
Section three.
Yeah.
Which is because Laron and I are looking at each other.
All the lawyers in the room, right?
Laron and I are looking at Oh, Section 3.
Oh, that, now that we got one. It.
It's the federal. It's the federal recognition of same-sex marriage, same-sex relationships. Benefit, federal benefits, tax stuff would all be included.
So he's saying that it's unconstitutional for the federal government to not give same-sex couples the same tax benefits that opposite-sex couples get.
Well, I think it's what he's saying is that it's unconstitutional to ban it. I'm not saying we should, federal government should give it. I think it's not constitutional to ban it.
And the technicality would be making something illegal for one class of people? Is that the idea?
Yeah, and the key to it, from my understanding, is that he's the scrutiny that same-sex or that gay and lesbian people get when they're discriminated against is now a higher standard of scrutiny. It's not just rational basis, and it gets into a lot of complex legal issues, but basically rational basis is, you know, very low standard, and now anyone who wants to discriminate against gay people will have to meet a much higher standard in order to do so.
In fact, it's called heightened scrutiny.
Yeah, heightened scrutiny or strict scrutiny, but I don't think he necessarily said strict scrutiny, but it's just higher than rational.
Okay, so it's still legal to discriminate. You just have to have a better reason for discriminating.
Right, and the government discriminates all the time. I mean, the government doesn't have to treat people equally, but if they don't treat people equally, they have to have a good reason not to do it, and now in order to discriminate, they have to have an even better reason.
And did they give an example of what some of these good reasons to discriminate are?
Not that I'm aware of. Not in this case. I don't think they offered examples. They just decided they're not going to defend it. But the key is, I mean, like Patty said, they're not saying that basically they're going to give these benefits. They're just not defending this case, and it'll take a court ruling or an act of Congress to actually overturn the law. So the House, like as you mentioned earlier, Newt Gingrich and the impeachment thing, but John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, signaled that the House is most likely going to intervene and defend the law because Obama is not.
Okay, now a similar thing is going on in California where the governor and the attorney general is now the governor and now the current attorney general has agreed that they're not going to defend the case that's going on against Proposition 8, which was the proposition in California that repealed same-sex marriage in that state. So the exact same thing went on where governor said he wasn't going to. And a couple of different groups came forward and said that they would defend the law themselves. One of those groups is just a citizens group. What's going on in court there now is that the court is deciding whether or not these people even have standing. In other words, if I were to sue that, John, you can't get married, I have no way to prevent you from getting married. It's only the state that has the ability to prevent you by not issuing you the license.
So you couldn't go and represent the state of Texas.
So how can I go and represent the state of Texas? Can the House of Representatives, which has actually, they have a stake in it because they're the ones who passed the law, but they have no enforcement arm. How can the House of Representatives even have standing in this?
Well, I think it's because the Attorney General gave it to them. I mean, that's it's structured in the law, you know, for them to be able to do that. The Attorney General, Eric Holder, wrote a letter to John Boehner saying, Department of Justice is not going to defend this law, but you're certainly within your purview to do so. That's my understanding.
And just as of yesterday, the California Attorney General filed a motion asking the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to lift the stay and to let same-sex marriages resume.
Oh, okay, so in the Proposition 8 case, that's that's something new that's coming
out. Yeah, happened yesterday.
Any response on that?
Yeah. I don't know. I found this in the letter from Eric Holder, who's the United States Attorney General, to John Boehner, Speaker of the House. In it, he explains his rationale and in part says, the Supreme Court has yet to rule on the appropriate level of scrutiny for classifications based on sexual orientation. It has, however, rendered a number of decisions that set forth the criteria that should inform this and any other judgment as to whether heightened scrutiny applies. Here we go. Number one. Let's see if this applies to GLBT people. In particular, I guess, same-sex couples. Number one, whether the group in question has suffered a history of discrimination. Number two, whether individuals, quote, exhibit obvious, immutable, or distinguishing characteristics that define them as a discrete group. Number three, whether the group is a minority or is politically powerless. And number four, whether the characteristics distinguishing the group have little relation to legitimate policy objectives or to an individual's ability to perform or contribute to society. So I would say, given those criteria, that our community certainly meets those.
I would say so.
It would qualify for
high
scrutiny.
That would be in the DOMA case that we do have some standing. And the problem with the Proposition 8 case in California, John, is what? Why don't these people particularly have standing?
The parties that are trying to...
That are trying to defend Proposition 8.
So, in other words, what's the difference between them and the U.S. House of Representatives?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, and it gets into a checks and balances thing, but I think the House has a right to defend the laws that are passed by Congress if the executive branch opts not to do so. I think that's built into the Constitution. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense if that Congress passes something and the executive branch just says, you know what, we're not going to enforce this. I mean, there has to be some recourse. Mm-hmm. But the parties in the Prop 8 case, they're just the same right-wingers who got the thing passed to begin with. They're trying to intervene in court, and it's like they're just a bunch of citizens. I mean,
with no enforcement power.
Yeah.
And with no stake because they're not being discriminated against.
Right.
I mean, they feel they are, that if Patty, you and Aaron, it's 7:15. I can't remember Aaron's name. Just because I've known her longer than I've known you, and we've been on the air for a dozen years together. What's her name?
I've known her longer than I've known you, too.
That's true. So if you and what's her name were to get married, this other group here is not affected. Any more than you're affected by their marriage.
Well, theoretically, but they claim that we could destroy their marriage.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's you know, if Aaron and I were to get married, it would just be devastating to their marriage. So.
And the whole country, really.
Right.
I mean, it would just, everything will fall apart.
You know, and they're saying we're politically powerless, but apparently many believe that we have the power to destroy civilization as we know it. So
that's a lot of power.
We haven't exercised it yet, have we? Just in Haiti and Katrina and all of those.
Right. And you know something for our new listeners? They don't even know the whole story, and we'll go into graphic detail sometime, Laurent, about Laurent and his partner and their daughter, who they had through a surrogate, and because that really drives people nuts.
Yes.
We'll go into that another week.
But they weren't living in sin when they had a child. They were married.
That's true. They were married. They're certainly married. And this is Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. Our guest today is John Wright. He is the online editor for Dallas Voice, which is the LGBT newspaper for North Texas, and really the only LGBT newspaper in Texas. With DOMA, where do you think this is going? Do you think that its days are numbered? And the reason, and the case that's going on right now is a case of, it's a Massachusetts case, actually two cases, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What are those cases? Can you explain what they are? Basically, without going into detail between the difference between the two different cases, because there are two of them.
There are two. One is New York, I think, and one is Connecticut, if I'm not mistaken.
I thought one of them is a Massachusetts case.
One of them is a Massachusetts case that they are suing the government because they're saying that we can't give our citizens all of the rights that are afforded to them. All of this same-sex couples, you know, they can give them all the state rights, but not the federal ones. So they're saying that... DOMA is preventing them from doing that, even though they have same-sex marriage in their state.
Now, I'm not a lawyer, but it's my understanding that these other cases that had been, that kind of preceded this, were filed in federal jurisdictions where the federal district itself had made a ruling on how to view sexual orientation in terms of what kind of scrutiny. But what happened with New York and Connecticut was that these cases were filed in a federal district had made no ruling, just like the Supreme Court hasn't. Mm. And that's why the Attorney General stepped in and said, well, then we have to assert how we believe that this needs to be viewed. And that was one of the purposes of the letter.
That's the key. There's no precedent in this circuit for scrutiny with regard to gay and lesbian people or sexual orientation. That's my understanding as well. I think as far as the future, the case is going to continue to, the cases are going to continue to meander their way through the system. But I think one of the real interesting things that's happening is it's really become a very political thing, and it's really brought this whole debate back to a national federal level. You have the Speaker of the House talking about it. You have obviously Obama talking about it. The initial immediate impact is political, and for the LGBT community, is a huge thing for Obama to quote unquote live up to his promise and make this decision regarding DOMA, which he says should be repealed. So it's a huge political deal, I think.
One of the things that I find interesting about it is that he still doesn't say he's in favor of same-sex marriage. His official position is it concerns him. He's considering it right now. And I find that really interesting. He wants this law gone, but he doesn't really want what would happen if it is gone.
I think it's all politics. I think if he were to get reelected, probably the next day he'll say, yeah, I'm for same-sex marriage.
Well, Clinton came around.
Yeah. Afterwards.
At the time at which Clinton went out of office, there was only one state that even had civil unions at the time.
Vermont.
In 2001. So different day, different time. Took Clinton a while to come around, but he has come around. You're right. But you think Clinton,
I mean, even Dick Cheney's come out for it afterwards.
Well, I think it's, I mean, this is kind of like, well, David should be banned from driving.
Well, that's
versus,
true.
Versus, I think David should drive. That's very, very different. Mm-hmm. Very different.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. I'll give you that.
You know, I could say you shouldn't be banned, but far be it for me to say
you should drive.
There's no question in my mind that Obama, personally, in his heart and mind, believes that gay people should be allowed to marry. It's just a politically nuanced position. I mean, it's the same reason why lawmakers in Texas who may even believe in same-sex marriage are, campaigning against it, because that's the only way to get reelected.
And it works the other way, too. I mean, one of the things that we've been trying to do in the legislative sessions the last two or three in Texas is to get 2106 removed from the penal code.
It's printed in
the book, and yet it says this is unconstitutional and cannot be enforced.
And 2106 is?
Is the sodomy law that was struck down by the United States Supreme Court in 2003 in Lawrence v. Texas. And yet it still sits on the books.
Right.
So we have to point this out. This has been, it's no longer any fact. And yet it's still printed. And I think a lot of people on the far right are opposed to removing it for their own political reasons. They're constituents who are wanting them to do anything they can, and if it's all it is to keep an unenforceable, unconstitutional law on the books in print, maybe that's what they get.
Yeah. They're afraid to have the discussion. They don't even want to talk. They don't want to have the committee hearing and have to talk about that stuff. It's just.
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM, the voice of the people. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Red Hot and Blue presents the second annual KNON Fort Worth Blues Fest at the Keys Lounge, 5677 West Creek Drive. This is Blue Lisa inviting you to join us Saturday, March 19th and Sunday, March 20th for Hot Texas Blues right in your backyard. Doors for both days are 3 p.m. This year's all-star lineup features Holland K. Smith, Jackie Don Lowe, James Hinkle, the Bruton Prize Swingmaster Review, Paul Bird, Trainwreck featuring K.M. Williams and Washboard Jackson, Cheryl Arena, Chris Salez, Kent Viceroy and the Super Kings, the Bulldogs, Dogs, Aaron Burton, the Rob Donovan Band, the Paul Harrington Band, Tone Summer and Gonzi Trevino, and the Mike Johnson Band. We will be selling delicious barbecue from Red Hot and Blue. Advance tickets are available now for only $10 per day at knowin.org. All Red Hot and Blue restaurants, Record Town in Fort Worth, Bill's Records in Dallas, Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie, and at the Keys Lounge. So come join KNON for the second annual Fort Worth Blues Fest, Saturday, March 19th and Sunday, March 20th at the Keys Lounge in Fort Worth, sponsored by Red Hot and Blue, catering with a Southern accent.
Just because it's the new year, that doesn't mean you can't donate your car, truck, or other vehicle to the KNON Vehicle Donation Program. You'll have a head start on your 2011 taxes, and we'll use the money now to provide more quality programming. Donating is easy. Just give us a call at 877-KNON-AUTO or donate online at www.knon.org. We'll take care of everything else. KNON-AUTO. Or KNON.org.
And it's time for the entertainment report.
All right, in addition to this year's telecast of the Oscars being considered by many the worst, the most boring ever. I mean, they are slamming this year's Oscars. Well, that's kind of boring. One of the only big gay moment was apparently cut from the show. Before presenting their award for Best Original Screenplay, Javier Bardem and Josh Brolin danced out onto the stage in matching tuxedos, and then they shared a kiss. Well, we didn't see it because the cameraman apparently chickened out and pulled away and put the camera on Javier Bardem's girlfriend, Penelope Cruz, and left it there for the entire time, and then cut back. Gay Entertainment blog After Ellen reached out to ABC to comment on the Josh Brolin and Javier Bardem kiss, and they responded with a no comment.
But there was a kiss in the audience from a winner, Laura Hershberger, two women.
Oh, really?
When she won, she got up and her... they exchanged a kiss, and she went up to the stage to get her Oscar
I
statue.
Missed that. Mm-hmm. I missed that one. Okay.
It was real subtle.
Oh, well.
We noticed.
Well, I don't think this one was real subtle. So, actress Meredith Baxter released a new memoir this week called Untied. In the book, Meredith talks about coming out, of course, and being physically abused by her ex-husband, David Burney. An accusation that David denies. The Family Ties star also writes that she coped in part by drinking heavily. She's been sober since 1990. Rosie O'Donnell is single again. She and Tracy Ketchkit, who lives in Austin, broke up. A rep for Rosie confirmed, stating that it was very complicated because their kids are very close. Now, if you recall, back in September, Rosie, who is planning a return to daytime television on Oprah's news station OWN, described Tracy as almost too good to be true, and described that she and Tracy are the Getty Bunch because Tracy has six kids and Rosie O'Donnell and her former partner have four kids. So that is a lot of kids. 10 kids?
Yeah, you have how many?
One, and we'll probably stop there. And last, Gladys filed an FCC complaint against the Spanish language show Jose Luis Sin Sincera, due to its repeated anti-gay content. Now, this complaint comes after the show has made a lot of obscene and vulgar verbally, and then women bleep it out, comments on the show about LGBT people. The CEO of National Hispanic Media Coalition agrees with the complaint, stating, quote, "I've never seen anything like this on English language television. Jose Luis makes Jerry Springer look like Mr. Rogers." Pretty vulgar show, and they don't bleep anything out. So,
wow. That's this week's entertainment report. Laurent, our new schedule here on Wednesday mornings, you're not going to be able to stay for the whole show, but you will be here for the first half.
Yes. So I'll make my best.
Okay. We won't make a big deal about your leaving, but leave quietly.
Yes. Well, you'll enjoy the rest of the show.
Be safe on going downtown.
I will.
You know, one of the things I want to talk about a little bit, this is not particularly gay news, but you can give us your gay perspective on it, Patty. You grew up in Libya.
Yeah, I did.
Now, a friend of mine who lives in Egypt now, she grew up here in Highland Park, and she lives in Egypt now. Most people know her as just very quiet, very, you know, just kind of a shy person. I knew her more as an adventurous person, that she would work, get money, go travel. After she worked in a store that I was working in, she went to work for Delta Airlines so that she could travel a little bit. She's in Egypt, and what she told me when she could get through on the internet after Egypt turned the internet back on was a lot of the news reports you're seeing, garbage. That, you know, Christiane Amanpour, oh, you're so dangerous here, so dangerous. What an idiot she was. That it was safe, that they were, you know, that obviously things were shut down. And Ruth Ann has a 10-year-old kid. She wasn't doing anything dangerous. But these reporters who were putting themselves in the middle of things rather than reporting were just being idiots. What's your take on what's going on in Libya? Obviously a different situation.
In a very different time. We were there in the 70s and in early 80s. And my dad worked for an oil company, so we lived there. Mm-hmm. It's why I ended up in Switzerland for high school, mm-hmm. before coming back to go to Baylor. And we have a Baylor story in a little bit, too. But in Libya, in the 70s in particular, remember, Gaddafi came in September 1st, 1969. And the flag that we see everyone, all the protesters using, is the old Libyan flag, mm-hmm. With King Idris, prior to Gaddafi's bloodless coup. But, you know, there were a lot of situations on a daily basis where there was no, you know, regular communication for expats. We had no real telephones. We had no television. We had shortwave radio. Many people listened to the BBC, Voice of America. No real restaurants, you know, that people frequented and such. So it wasn't really this, you know, where you could just turn on the television and see what's going on kind of thing. But it was a pretty close-knit community we had, but we lived among Libyans. We didn't live in a compound where, you know, we were, you know, secluded. Mm-hmm. And my take on it from watching the television is to see these people stand up and really fight for their freedom against a true tyrant. I mean, he's done a lot of good for Libya over the years, but I think he's done a lot more harm to not only his own people, but people around the world. And so I really cherish this time that they're fighting for this and hope they pull through. There are a lot of things that I believe in the news about, you know, they were using overkill weapons to kill their own people, like anti-aircraft missiles shot at people, you know, and that sort of thing. But I do think that the media probably misses a lot because there's not a lot of communication if you've shut down the internet. So it wouldn't surprise me. I think you can say Christiane Amanpour is an idiot, but what might be happening in a pocket of Cairo might not be happening in another section or in Tripoli the same way. So I would love to see the eastern portion of the country, which has been sort of free now, declare its independence and bring in some outside international allies to help shore up.
Are you still in touch with anybody there?
No.
Okay, so you're not getting direct communication.
Don't have anything direct, but yeah, I think it's really, really interesting what's going on. And Libya is so different from what's happening elsewhere around the Mediterranean basin, mm-hmm. and in the Middle East, because it's the leader is not getting it. He's not an it-getter at all. And, you know, the others are kind of seeing the writing and saying, oh, we've got to make reforms, we've got to make changes, I'm not going to run for re-election, and neither is my son. You know, they're doing all of this stuff to kind of say, calm down. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and Gaddafi has been a bully, and bullying has been a topic in the news here. How's that for a segue? one of the bills going through the legislature right now, actually several of the bills going through the legislature right now, have to do with bullying, and that has to do with what went on this fall with the whole discussion about bullying and the number of identified suicides of teens that had to do with bullying. And I say identified because we know there are a lot more. We know it's something that happens very regularly. These have just been identified. John, yesterday in the legislature, you were watching the hearings. Tell us what went on with the hearings, and what are the bills, first of all, that are going through the legislature, basically? I'm not asking you to quote the bills, but what would the bills do?
Well, there are several bills. The one yesterday was considered to be sort of the standard bearer and the most comprehensive piece, and that was by Mark Strama. It's, I think, HB 224. It was in the House Committee on Public Education yesterday, and this is the bill that originally had sexual orientation in it, but not gender identity. The bill in Wendy Davis's bill in the Senate does have gender identity and expression. Anyhow, Strama's bill was before that committee yesterday. At the beginning of the hearing, or before the hearing, he substituted a bill that does not have sexual orientation. In other words, they took out all the enumerated categories, and the reason for that was because they felt like it just didn't have a chance of passing with all those categories in there, including sexual orientation and possibly gender identity if it were to be added. So.
Okay, so they're taking the categories out, and Patty, you've talked about this several times. You've looked into this and how it works in other states. How effective are bullying bills that don't specify who you can't bully?
Well, I think that the research generally shows very clearly that you need to name it. You need to name what the problem is and the name of the type of bullying, and otherwise kids don't get it, parents don't get it, teachers don't get it. And, you know, we just went through this, I think, with DISD here, talking about an anti-bullying bill and the need for specificity. It's going to be interesting, I think, to see what happens in the legislature, because they only meet every other year, and this is our opportunity. And for many years, we've been fighting really bad bills, and then we sort of hit a neutral period, and now we've been able to really more strongly focus on positive bills. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little disappointing to me to hear Mark Strama has introduced a bill that strips that out. But it's also going to be interesting to see how legislators respond to that. Mm-hmm. Because if that was their concern, will they pass a bill that's, you know, maybe lip service, in essence, but still something, mm-hmm. which right. we don't have statewide?
I think the bill still would do some really important things. It would, for the first time, define cyberbullying, which is what a lot of the bullying is these days. It's online. It's on Facebook. So it would give educators tools to address that. There's a lot of other really important stuff in the bill, and so I think the question just became, okay, if we're going to fight about the sexual orientation part and that's going to kill the bill, is it better to have a chance of it passing and take it out? And ultimately they just determined that was the case. The interesting thing in watching the hearing yesterday, though, was that certainly has not stopped the opposition, the Liberty Institute and the Eagle Forum and those groups from opposing the bill, because the bill still has language in there that says the Texas Education Commissioner would determine what categories of kids would this bill would apply to. And so the right-wingers were all testifying yesterday, oh, this is just going to be a slippery slope, and the education commissioner is going to get it, and he's going to put sexual orientation in there, and you're trying to create a new class of people. I love that one. Trying to create a new class of people.
As opposed to the ones who were, they would just love to be in the closet, and you would never see them, and they don't exist.
That's right. You don't care about this. You're not trying to solve the problem of bullying. You're trying to create a new class of people.
Okay, so here's my problem with this. It's that they're taking it, allowing the education commissioner to decide what categories, so he actually, being an appointee of our current governor, could be somebody who is against having sexual orientation and gender expression and identity in there. So he can decide that it is okay to bully certain categories?
Well, yeah, there's a whole rulemaking process that my understanding is there would be public hearings and public input on what the categories would be. And, you know, I'm not intimately familiar with that process, but it would be far less political than the legislature. And so the thought is that it would be a lot easier to get him to do it than it would be to get a House of Representatives that's two-thirds Republican in Texas.
And I understand that. It would still be debated that it would be okay to bully gay kids or kids who, I was doing an article on this, and I was talking to somebody who's transgender, and she said, well, you do understand that the reason for bullying, usually, especially in elementary school and in junior high school, it's usually not sexual orientation. She said you have to include gender identity because a little boy is bullied for being a sissy, which is his gender expression. Mm-hmm. It's not his sexual orientation. It's how he appears to other kids. He appears to be less masculine. So you have to include that. If you don't include that, well, then and you just have sexual orientation in there, then the teacher can say, oh, well, he wasn't. He said nothing about the kid being gay. He was talking about him being effeminate. And so that's okay, but the other, I mean, and we're laughing because it's stupid. Any bullying should be illegal, and I guess we need to identify categories to make sure the teachers understand it's if he calls him gay, if he calls him a sissy, if he calls her, you know, a dyke, if he calls, you know, and all these things, if he calls the, you know, a girl too butch, if he calls... All of those things are bad, and I guess you have to enumerate them to these people who are specifically the ones arguing against right now. But just the idea that they're going to debate that some bullying is okay is not okay. Right? am I nuts on this or what? You know,
well, when you consider, I mean, we're talking about, you know, John mentioned Eagle Forum and Liberty, you know, council, whatever they call themselves. And, you know, these are the very people that crafted the Republican platform in the state of Texas, which really calls for, you know, the recriminalization of being gay. So this doesn't surprise me at all that this is what they're pushing for, because they're not interested in solving bullying at all. This is all about not recognizing that gay people exist, for one, in Texas, kind of like Ahmadinejad in Iran. You know, they're not here. And if they are here, they shouldn't be. They should be, you know, pushed away into the closet. And that's their focus. And so, you know, we keep thinking about that as we go into lobby day on Monday, mm-hmm. that's their rationale for opposing such a bill. It's not dealing with the problem.
Mm-hmm. Another interesting thing from that hearing, for the second straight time, my understanding, has also happened in 2009 in the last session. One of our normal allies, the ACLU, testified against the bill because they're concerned about free speech issues when it comes to cyberbullying and parental rights, and then kids being able to say what they want online. So that was kind of disappointing in watching that hearing, was to see the ACLU actually oppose this bill.
Well, see, but that's where I think the right wing is so so off base. They say, well, what was it, the Dukakis race, where they started saying the, you know, card-carrying ACLU member, mm-hmm. sort of thing. But the ACLU is out there doing that very thing no matter what the issue is. They're going to, you know, cling to and grasp and hold on to those First Amendment rights that they believe everybody should have, even if you're the KKK. They've defended the KKK before. So, you know, right-wingers out there who think that the ACLU is completely lopsided, they're wrong. Obviously, in this case.
Yeah, they defend everybody's right. It's just very often it is the right wing that's trying to take away the right to speak of other people, so except for their own. But so where do you think this bill is going to go, John, just from hearing the hearings? Did it look like it had support?
It's hard to tell from a committee hearing, but it did pass out of that committee unanimously last time with sexual orientation in it. Mm-hmm. And so... the legislature's changed since then, obviously, so we'll see. But I think, you know, chances are pretty good that it'll make it out of committee. What happens on the floor, what happens in the Senate, God only knows, you know.
I'm impressed that it's had a hearing. You know, and we're talking about, you know, all these emergency bills ahead of it.
Yeah, I can't believe that there wasn't another abortion bill that needed to go first, you know.
Right.
I mean, sonograms, I mean, there's so much... so much stuff.
Guns in high schools.
Guns on campus.
Colleges.
Yes.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Patty Fink. John Wright is our guest from Dallas Voice. We'll be back with more right after this.
Do you need free help with your taxes? I'm State Senator Royce West to tell you about United Way's free tax preparation services. IRS-certified tax preparers will ensure individuals or families who earned less than $50,000 last year receive the highest refund possible. Sites open through April in convenient locations. They're open days, evenings, and weekends. To locate the free United Way tax preparation site near you, simply dial 211. Thank you.
The 10th annual KNON Mardi Gras Gumbo Party is coming to Poor David's Pub this Saturday, March 5th, and the competition will be fierce. Defending their 2010 Best Gumbo title will be the Alligator Cafe, facing off against returning competitors Crawdads of Dallas and Louisiana Red. New this year is gumbo from A Perfect Party Events and Catering and Offshore's Next Door. That's five of DFW's finest eating establishments vying to claim the title Best Gumbo. Entertainment by Lil Jimmy and the Feedback Band, featuring foot tapping, Cajun, and R&B music for your dancing pleasure. This event is not to be missed. Advance tickets are only $10 and available now at knon.org, Bill's Records in Dallas, and Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie. Who will claim the title of Best Gumbo? You decide at the 10th annual KNON Mardi Gras Gumbo Party this Saturday, March 5th at Poor David's Pub, located at 1313 South Lamar in Dallas. Laissez le bon temps rouler, mes amis!
Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
It's time for
Those Darn Heterosexuals, a conservative church that ministers to the homeless, the downtrodden, and the persecuted, named itself after verse 13 in 1 Corinthians. The heterosexuals at Scum of the Earth Church in Denver say they preach non-judgmental Christianity.
The Houston Chronicle reports that pet psychic Sonia Fitzpatrick says dogs are embarrassed by their owners' poor fashion sense when their owners dress them in Halloween costumes. These were obviously heterosexual dog owners with a poor pet fashion sense.
Turkey has only one exemption from compulsory military service, but their do-ask, must-tell includes the requirement of showing proof of homosexuality. Some gay men were ordered to produce witnesses to their homosexual acts. Others were ordered to prove their claims by producing pictures in which they were required to be involved in certain sexual acts in the receiving position. Because in Turkey, they still need their tops in the armed forces. And that's this week's...
Those darn heterosexuals.
I know. Patty always is questionable.
Very questionable taste. You know?
That one's especially for our opening show in the mornings. John, our mayor, former mayor, resigned last week. And upon resigning, he sent out an extremely homophobic tweet. Tell us about that. What happened?
But yeah, the same day, actually, that he announced his resignation, which was last Wednesday, a tweet originated from his Twitter account. Basically criticizing Obama for, as we talked about, deciding not to defend DOMA anymore. And the tweet also said something along the lines of, "We need leaders in Washington who will stand for the principle of marriage between one man and one woman." And so it was pretty shocking, I think, to the LGBT community that, I mean, my God, this guy was, he seemed like a, you know, pretty fair-minded guy when he was mayor, and now all of a sudden he's running for Senate and he's tweeting these anti-gay...
It was before he even announced he was running for Senate, actually.
It was before he formally announced.
While
he was still sitting mayor. So basically, our tax dollars paid for that tweet, is how I look at it. Anyhow, there's been some speculation, rumors, et cetera, that he didn't actually send it, that his new Senate campaign team sent it, some overzealous campaign worker... we don't really know. I'm not sure if we ever will. But to me, at this point, it doesn't really matter, because if you go to Leppert's Senate campaign website, you will see that he clearly states on there, under top issues, he lists marriage, and he says that not only is he against same-sex marriage, he's against civil unions, any government-sanctioned, you know, same-sex relationship. He is now against. That's a pretty conservative position.
It's dramatic. It's dramatic. And personally, I hold him personally accountable and responsible for anything that shows up in his name. Whether it's, I mean, if it's a staffer and that was erroneous, then we should be hearing a press release about the person being fired. Otherwise, they are doing exactly what he's told them to do, and I see it no differently.
And the tweet has not been deleted. You can go back and delete your tweets just like you can delete your Facebook status updates. It has not been deleted. So short of, I mean, yeah, like you said, he's responsible for that Twitter account. I mean, short of it being hacked, you know, I mean, so.
Well, and years ago when he was in a heated race with Ed Oakley in a runoff for mayor, and Ed Oakley being an openly gay man, and he, you know, got in the low 40s, I guess, in the runoff. But I remember when, you know, when the Dallas Gay and Lesbian Alliance was doing endorsements and Tom Leppard didn't even seek it. And I personally got really offended by a Dallas Voice headline above the fold written by David Webb, who's a dear friend of all of ours, and where he said, you know, Leppard was gay friendly. And so he offered to let me write an op-ed piece challenging that, and I did. Because I didn't think he was gay-friendly at all. And we met with him after he won, and he seemed to come around, and he went to Black Tie Dinner, and he appeared at the parade.
And his chief of staff was openly gay.
Oh, sure. And I think he attended, actually, two pride parades in his tenure, and then there was nothing. And then he joined First Baptist Church, and we all knew that was a kind of a pander moment.
It was an indication of where he was moving.
Right, where he hadn't been really, you know, he hadn't even spoken about his religion prior to that. And then this now, I just think it's complete pander. We've been pandered to, and now he's got a new group he's pandering to.
And one of the things, Rob Schlein, who's the president of Dallas Log Cabin Republicans, said was, it's interesting that he would even put these on his website because nobody else who's indicated an interest in running for Senate has those kinds of divisive social issues on their website. So Leppard has tried to move himself to the right of David Dewhurst and other people who are interested in running right now, which is an interesting place for him to be when he wasn't there 2 weeks ago. So,
well, Texas, you know, Republican primary voters in Texas are about as right-wing as you're going to find, so I'm sure his, you know, hot shot new campaign team that he's brought in from out of state feels like the first thing they need to do is paint him as a, you know, as a, I don't want to say that word, but pretty far right.
Tea Party approved, for sure.
Tea Party approved.
But yet the Tea Party says they don't have an opinion on these issues, yet, you know,
well,
perhaps they do.
And it's interesting to note that's we're not the only thing he was for before he was against. He's now come out against earmarks for the Trinity River Project, which, of course, you know, he was the biggest supporter of the project when he was mayor. So,
and reliant on that money coming in.
Reliant on that money. So it's stunning, shocking pandering. You know, it really is. I mean, he stabbed us on the back before.
I know,
before
John.
Got out the
he
door.
Didn't mean that when he said shocking.
Right.
It is. It's very over the top pandering, and if people can't see it for what it is, I feel sorry for their, you know, their low nose. As far as I'm concerned, low information, no information voters.
So actually, people who are even considering voting for him, they're the ones who should be more offended by it than we.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we've been pandered to. That's clear. And if they can't see that they're being pandered to in the most overt of ways.
This is just a guy you can't trust. So, on Monday is Lobby Day. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago, but Patty, you're going?
I'm going to go, yes. I'm going to go get into Austin on Sunday and attend on Monday. And, you know, Equality Texas, which has been our statewide civil rights organization for many years, many people knew it as the Lesbian Gay Rights Lobby of Texas. Yeah. Has been around for a couple of decades and organizes a lobby day every session. And, of course, the Texas legislature only meets every other year. So this is an opportunity to, if you've never done it before, you ought to take part in being a full citizen, talking to your representatives who write the laws you're expected to abide by, because they do affect you. And that's local, state, and federal. You ought to be doing it. And this is an opportunity to meet with legislators who are writing laws that affect our community. Absolutely.
And on Lobby Day, actually, I'm saying, you know, and you're saying the day is geared toward gay and lesbian issues and transgender issues. If you're down there and you walk into a legislator's office, go talk to them about what interests you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, if people have never been before, there's a certain amount of training that happens. It's not intimidating.
People lobby in groups even.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because you're a constituent of a specific legislator in the House and one in the Senate. And so you want to, of course, you have the most impact on your own legislator, but people do this in groups. But the training is fairly minimal in terms of what you need, but it's certainly ample to get you through the day. And I don't know anyone who's experienced the day who's, felt like they didn't have what they needed mm-hmm. at the start and didn't have a successful day. So this is a great opportunity to
participate. There are two reasons and two good excuses that people use not to go. One of them is, well, you know, my legislator is Rafael Anchieta, is Wendy Davis. Wendy wrote the bill. I don't have to go and talk to her. The other one is, my legislator is, pick one, and there's no way he'll ever support this bill. And both really need to hear from their legislators, don't they?
Oh, I think so.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest problem with the second example you mentioned is that they don't even know that they have gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender constituents, and so going to meet with them, might open to their eyes to the fact that, oh, there's actually gay people who live in my district. Mm-hmm. You might wonder, well, how could they not know that? Well,
because you never went in and said hi.
That's right.
Well, and years ago, a certain congressman decided he didn't have any gay people in his district too, from right here in Dallas.
Right. Right. And actually, that's according to the census, there are like 7 counties in the entire country, and this was from the last census, where they couldn't identify, even though the question wasn't asked, that there is a gay couple living there.
Three counties.
It's down to 3 counties?
No, in 2000 it was 3 counties.
Oh, okay.
Counties in the entire country.
One of them was in Texas, like where the Big Bend is or something.
Where there's only maybe 3 people.
Right.
Anyway, that's coming up Monday, and if you're interested in finding out more, equalitytexas.org has information mm-hmm. and a place where you can lend your name, say you're coming, so they can plan for you to be there.
Mm-hmm. Right, and again, no matter what side of these issues you're on, it's worth going down to talk to your legislators. And very often you don't get to see your own legislator. Sometimes it's their legislative assistant, who is the person who's sitting there counting 1 gay person, 2 gay person, 3 gay people, 1 anti-gay one, and is actually tallying who's coming to speak to them and about what and where they stand on the issue.
And sometimes you do get somebody down the totem pole. I remember one year when I was on the National Board of Governors for the Human Rights Campaign, we did a lobby day, and we got in to see Kay Bailey Hutchison's office, and we got the second assistant letter correspondent or mm-hmm. something. That's who spoke with us. We were so proud.
But
we got in to see somebody. Exactly.
And it got logged, and she knows that a certain number of people did go to speak to her. Baylor story before we run out of time.
Oh, Baylor University, my alma mater, is actually a group is exploring the opportunity to get a charter for a gay-straight alliance on campus. Certainly not official.
Which is huge, because Baylor several years ago had sued their own Gay and Lesbian Alumni Association, which donated it came to like millions of dollars to that school. They'd rather not have those people even use the name Baylor, and now there's going to be a GSA.
Right. They shut down a website that we had as alumni and the use of anything Baylor related. Cease and desist came from the attorney. But now the GSA, and it was printed in the Lariat, which is the Baylor on campus paper. They're seeking
a. Shut down the school paper yet?
No, not yet.
Printing it?
Can't you get kicked out for being publicly gay?
I think they probably find a way to do that. I don't honestly don't know what the procedure is, or how ingrained it is. But there's certainly been GLBT people at Baylor for many years. In fact, our alumni association is quite large. and that's just people who connected online. Mm. So anyway, we'll follow this along and see how it goes. But that would be interesting to have a GSA. They're calling it the Sexual Identity Forum, which, so it's not really a GSA. It's a forum to discuss issues. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, well, we'll see whether you get kicked off campus or not. Of course, my gay alliance at my school just recently celebrated, I think, its 40th birthday. And we celebrated Harvey Milk Day on campus because Harvey was an alumni of my school. And he's generally recognized as the most prominent alumni in my school. John, we had mentioned abortion bill. We have like 2 minutes left. Mentioned abortion bill that is being ramrodded through the legislature. What is the story there?
Well, I don't really follow those issues as closely as LGBT issues, but my understanding is basically it would require a woman to get a sonogram before having an abortion, is the one bill that's already passed, I think.
Yeah, and that's government, getting government out of our lives.
That's right.
So you can listen to Lambda Weekly on podcasts online at lambdaweekly.com. You can download them through iTunes.
You can friend us on Facebook.
You can friend us on Facebook. And we're here now every Wednesday from 7 to 8 a.m.
7 to 8 a.m. John, thank you for being our first Wednesday drive time edition of Lambda Weekly. Yes.
Thanks for having me. I'm going to go home and go back to bed.
There you go.
And Patty, who thank you for dressing up for this.
Oh, absolutely. We dress for radio every week.
Well, but you had to dress for work, and you are way overdressed since you work at home.
Right, I am. Absolutely.
So go home, put your pajamas back on. We're going out with music from
Atsuko Hashimoto.
Thank you for listening to the KNON Morning Line. We'd like to remind you that the views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNON 89.3 FM.